Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
How Ireland and Irish America have come to acquire great political clout in Washington is the subject of a book called The Tribe. The author is Katrina Perry, RTE's former Washington correspondent. Her subtitle is The Inside Story of Irish Power and Influence in US Politics. Katrina, thank you very much indeed for coming to studio. Let's start with that title. Why do you use the word tribe in respect of Irish America?
Yeah, I mean, the word tribe is often used in relation to the Jewish community in America in terms of the rallying of how powerful that lobby is. So through my research at looking at Irish America and that powerful lobby, there were a lot of similarities. And in fact, a lot of people that I spoke to said there's really no electoral gain for them being involved in anything to do with Ireland or Irish America. They did it purely because of some kind of emotional connection, cellular level connection, that they felt part of something bigger than themselves, felt part of a tribe, mm-hmm. essentially, or a clan. Is another word I guess we would use here. So I just felt that for this book, which is about now Ireland, Irish influence in the US and Irish America now, it's not a history book.
Yes.
That was just a good descriptor in terms of why all these people, Republicans, Democrats, come together under one banner of working
yeah,
for Ireland.
I suppose if you go back a little bit, I mean, there was what you might call the golden age of Irish America, or at least Irish American influence, going back, say, to the 70s, where you had Jimmy Carter, supporting the idea of peace initiatives. Then you had Reagan, you had the Four Horsemen, Kennedy, Moynihan and others, Tip O'Neill, moving on to the Clinton influence. But has the situation, you know, are we operating at a much lower level now in terms of the influence, the political influence of Irish America?
Yes, I think so. It's changed, definitely. And the people that I interviewed, you know, some of them were around during those past eras, if you like, that you mentioned there, including obviously Bill Clinton. I interviewed him for the book as well. And Terry McAuliffe and Ray Flynn, who's a mayor in Boston, who was big part of the Irish voting machine and was there with JFK as well, that, you know, they felt at one point there was an Irish voting bloc as such. That is long gone. I couldn't find anyone that would say there was an Irish voting bloc from local level politics all the way up to a national election for the president. So I think it has changed, but as we've seen actually in the last year with Brexit, there's still very much so a powerful political influence there. I mean, we've seen Congress people come out with statements, resolutions on the floor of the House of Representatives around Brexit, around, you know, refusing to agree US-UK trade deal that would damage the Good Friday Agreement or see a border on this island. So we've actually seen through Brexit a resurgence mm-hmm. in that Irish-American
yeah.
influence.
And what accounts for that, or what you call the Irish power and influence in US politics?
Well, again, it's going back to people feeling they want to belong to something greater than themselves. I think it comes from the US being a nation of immigrants, essentially, mm-hmm. that, you know, very many people want to know where they're from. Many of us in Ireland know where we're from. And, you know, for many people, it's from the same small area for generations.
And does part of it maybe stem from a sense of grievance that sets some Irish, or that sets Irish Americans apart, feeding into their identity? I mean, going back to famine times?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people recounted to me stories that had been handed down through their family of, you know, having to flee Ireland in famine times, or even more recently after the Rising or during the Civil War and so on. And they arrived in America with romantic notions, essentially, or deeply political notions about what was right and what was wrong, a sense of social justice, very politically active. So they got involved in politics very early on, be it at trade union level when they were working on building sites or whatever, all the way through to City Hall and on into Capitol Hill and the White House. So people felt that that was somehow in their blood or in their gene pool to fight for social justice, to be involved in politics, that their way of getting up mm-hmm. in America was to actually take control of the reins themselves.
Yeah, and you note, Katrina, that Irish Americans are as likely, or even maybe more likely, to vote Republican as Democrat these days. Now, what is the Republican Party's appeal to Irish American voters?
Well, this was part of the book that kind of is the myth-busting section. That, you know, I feel in Ireland here, a lot of people think that Irish-Americans are all Democrats when they're not. And there's a number of people I spoke to have said they've even seen a swing from their Democratic constituencies, that their old voters, if you like, are now becoming Republicans. And a big part of it is to do around family value issues, social issues. The Democrats, you know, would be seen to be pro-abortion, if you like, or pro-choice. At least the Republican Party would be seen as being anti that. That's something that appeals to a lot of Irish-American, Irish-Catholic Americans in particular. They tend to be far more conservative, perhaps, than we are here on this island. That's one big thing. Other things would be a preference for lower taxes, you know, more business-friendly. As the Irish immigrants assimilated into the US population, they moved into the wealthier areas. And it's true not just of Irish immigrants, but of all immigrant populations in the US. Moving into wealthier areas, their focus tends to change and they're less concerned about working rights or access to housing and so on that maybe the Democratic Party is bigger on, and they become more interested in taxation and economic issues, which would be more in the Republican.
People say of your own generation, Katrina, who would have worked, be over there working in finance or high tech or whatever. I mean, to what extent can they be described as, okay, they're Irish immigrants as opposed to Irish Americans?
Yeah.
But I mean, do they have a connection with home, other than the obvious family ones? I mean, is there any kind of a political driver that they would be influenced by?
That's actually a really interesting movement that's happening in the US now, and it's a challenge for our diplomats over there, is how you marry those two communities. So you have, like, say, the Irish Americans who have one sense of Ireland, and then you have the Irish born people who've moved from Ireland, know exactly what it's all about, and maybe are less inclined to actually get involved in the Irish scene, if you want to call it that, in the US. And it's about how you reel those people in, and the movement is more towards doing it through business ties, through education ties, through cultural ties, and less about maybe political activism. But you're still maintaining that level of influence and connection back to this
and
island.
I suppose one thing that helps, and you identify this in the book, that, you know, a politician needs what you call a cause to win over Irish America. Bill Clinton understood this, but I mean, the cause was there right in front of him, wasn't it? And you got a little bit of a nudging along the way.
That's it, exactly. And Bill Clinton himself actually makes that point, that, you know, that all stemmed from the New York area, and during the primaries he wanted to rally support there, and his Irish American friends and advisors who were from New York said, well, this would be a really good issue for you to get involved in. And he does admit in the book that, yeah, he did it for a political expediency initially, you know, and then he had a connection as well himself, but that it was a clever thing to do. But again, what almost everyone said to me was, in the intervening 21 years since the Good Friday Agreement, that cause has been lacking. There's been peace on this island, there's been prosperity, as we know, and that didn't...
So what's the cause?
Yeah, so the cause now is Brexit. Mm-hmm. And that's what they've all said, you know, that has kind of given them something to get their teeth into, to, you know, at a very basic level, put statements out about table resolutions, about actually talk to voters about that. It's something tangible, it's not
a tricky one as well for, I suppose, diplomats and politicians, given how Donald Trump is so openly pro-Brexit.
It's very challenging, yeah. And, you know, I think the President Trump's attitude towards Brexit is very well documented. The key point is that when it comes to, say, a trade deal between the US and UK, that's out of his remit as such. He'll sign the bill into law ultimately, but it has to come through the Congress people first, through a committee in the House of Representatives, and then onto the floor for a vote. And that's a very long, winding process. So actually, it matters more in the first instance what the attitudes are of the Congress people towards a deal than the President.
Yeah, and one of the points you make as well, I think, is that, you know, particularly with the fact that, you know, sort of the economic improvements are there, the peace is there, okay, there will be a post-Brexit presumably fairly quickly if Boris Johnson gets his deal through and so forth. It underlies the, I suppose, the importance of access then, and the whole St. Patrick's Week festival, the White House, Shamrock, party, the speaker's lunch. That's not something that can be taken for granted.
It can't be taken for granted. You know, with every changing administration, there's a risk that they're not going to carry on through with the tradition. And, the other embassies and the other countries represented in Washington are very, very jealous of the access that Ireland gets and the takeover of Washington, D.C. I mean, you've seen it yourself. The town comes to standstill, basically, on that day for the various meetings and receptions and so on. But our diplomats, every 4 years when there's a new president, or 8 years, have to go and canvass. And, you know, I talk about the efforts about to do that in the book. And Anne Anderson, who was the ambassador at the time that Donald Trump got elected, you know, tells some very funny stories about having to try and pin Donald Trump basically at various pre-inauguration parties to try and get a commitment out of him.
You had your own little footnote in Irish history there as well, by asking a question at the right time, I think, in the press room.
Unbeknownst to myself, but you know, I was at the press conference on the basically first day, and it was like, this is a question obviously you're going to have to ask as the Irish journalist there.
Well, you came back from Washington, you were on the 6-1, and you've been off the screens for the last, 7 or 8 months, for reasons to do with motherhood. How's all that working out?
Yeah. It's full on, as every parent listening knows, I'm sure. But very rewarding, but I think probably one of the hardest jobs I've had. But I have to say the long hours and the funny time zones in the US trained me well for the sleepless nights, sleeping 2 hours here and 2 hours there as best you can.
Okay, well, look, we wish you the best. And you'll be back soon?
Yeah, back next month. So.
Okay, well, look, Katrina Perry, thank you so much indeed for coming to studio. The book is called The Tribe, The Inside Story of Irish Power and Influence in US Politics, published by Gill Books.